student union. I understand you're going on a tour, and so enjoy. Today's low because it's Friday in terms of student enrollment, but enjoy.
Thank you for your hospitality. Thank you for your comments. So we are in the section 215, where we'll interact with the city council personnel. I also want to thank Lillian and Vice Chancellor Sarah. Did I pronounce that right? I hope I did. The package that was put forward to this meeting, and if you didn't receive it, there are some materials here, is absolutely excellent. It has a lot of detail. It was a chance to prepare for what the meeting will be. And to interact more effectively. Now, the heart of that package, at least in terms of the number of pages, is that is dedicated to the construction program. And we dedicated an hour and 20 minutes of this agenda to the construction program, not just the reporting of what's going on, but the various ways it is changing its operations to the benefit of the district. We want to hear that in the report of the meeting. I have one concern I want to express in this period, and that's the brevity of the minutes. Now, it's not agendized, so we can discuss it, but it's not inappropriate for you to make comments. And my comments are these. The entry concerning the presentation at the last meeting by KPMG reads as follows. Mrs. Tracy Hensley stated that the expenditure for the fiscal year ended June 30th, total approximately $429 million. She discussed the bond audit document with respect to the areas of audit deficit and the results of the audit. Much more than that happened at the meeting. The next paragraph in red are comments I made from my notes to expand on those comments to discuss in more detail what actually transpired. I know there is a need for brevity, first of all, to avoid legal consequences in some cases for ongoing litigation. Nonetheless, and I will agendize it to the next meeting so we can all discuss it. This is to prepare you for it as to whether or not you think the minutes are sufficiently detailed to really record what took place and what's important. This is from the point of view of the citizens. I also ask all of you to take notes so that if the next set of minutes comes out and it lacks some things that you think were important, you can have your notes included as amendments. Clearly, we've heard about that. You can take mine.
Thanks. I have extra
copies. Okay. At one point, all the actual meeting was recorded word for word.
Yes.
It still is.
Okay.
And was available on the website.
Yeah.
So if somebody really wanted in-depth analysis of what we did, it was available.
So I ask you not to begin a discussion of this topic because it wasn't agendized.
I just want to know if that was still the case.
If that is still the case, that's my understanding. Does anybody understand differently?
Okay.
Okay. Then finally, we had a meeting of the ad hoc advisory committee in the 2 hours that preceded this meeting. We have some very interesting things to report out as a result of that. But that's not the point I want to make. Only the judgment about whether we sorted out or whether we sorted out as part of this meeting. It is agendized. The point I want to make is we can only have advisory committees if they are ad hoc in nature. If these things become a standing committee, then under the Brown Act, we can't have small meetings to come to conclusions to advise this group. Everything has to be done in a large body. That's not efficient. Remember that these ad hoc committees report to you for your vote for the committee vote as a whole. So they don't make judgments, they just make recommendations. Continuing along those lines, my point is, that one of the characteristics of ad hoc, one characteristic is not regularly scheduled. We need that. Okay. Another characteristic, though, is a diversity of membership, not the same people meeting all the time, but not terrific on that. Therefore, I strongly advise those of you who can to attend these advisory committee meetings. So, in fact, we do get inputs from different people, and we are not accused of being not ad hoc. This is not our intent. Those are my opening remarks. Do we have any public speakers?
No.
Good, we need time. Approval of minutes. And the minutes we're talking about, these minutes amended by the red comments, I'm also going to make for my addition, which is why I asked you to take those for that purpose.
I just noted in my quick view of it that under construction concerns, Mr. Ambrose expressed some concerns about two meetings earlier here. He said Mr. O'Reilly responded to these concerns. The we don't know what he responded. I want to know, I don't remember.
Well, that is an example of concern that the notes that you reviewed.
Well,
okay, because that information is not provided.
I'm one of those who don't like long minutes. I believe minutes should be summaries. But this summary, there could have been a summary right in there. I don't believe in word for word minutes. They're unnecessary.
Well, I think that's a good example.
I would move that we approve these minutes, but subject to the fact that I think they are too brief.
And we're going to discuss that next time.
And we're discussing.
So we're going to accept it.
I would accept these minutes as presented.
For this. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Freeze your hands. It's easier. Well, did you get another one? Get them all in there?
Yeah.
All opposed? All who chose not to vote, one no vote? Okay, duly passes. The next item is we have to officially approve the dates that are scheduled for the next meeting. The next, very next meeting is the bottom of Friday, June 21st. We can never officially approve that. That's why I'm going to point it out to you so we do that. I believe, if anybody can help me here, that the meeting at the bottom, we did vote on it. It's a subsequent one, we did not vote on. Okay, so is there, why don't you take a couple of minutes, look at your calendars, and see if anything else presents a big issue. To try and cover the priority.
You can celebrate my birthday and show you.
June 21st is our next meeting.
Yes, okay, that's been voted on. It's all the subsequent.
Move to accept the meeting date.
Well, let's okay.
Yeah. Motion on the floor.
Motion's on the floor. Seconded. I'm seconded by an hour and discussion. I have an easy to a little long to be a member of our mayor. It turns out, after all, the 23rd. The deal, which is why you need to appoint someone.
No, I'm just looking at the date on the. Agenda is I'm looking at it and it says June 20th, which is a Thursday.
Are you sure?
Okay. I know that's fine. Thank you. So the motion was made by Ethel and Dan. You need that information related to the motion. How does it later?
Mm-hmm.
Are all of these most likely to be held at various times?
Every other one, the next one. Mm-hmm. The one after that will be a campus, and we have to decide what campus it will be. And it will just alternate from that point on. And so prior to
so it takes a while.
Time. You're hampered by a few. They don't always help.
So hopefully you had an opportunity to digest them.
You're welcome. Give us all that stuff. That's something we noticed, but we'll save that to the end.
That's fine.
They're really quite good. The one thing that was not in the package you sent out is what you're addressing now, which is the top five. So it gave us a complete menu of everything we wanted.
Okay, right. So with regard to the five items that we presented last time, I wanted to update on one particular one of those. If you remember our discussion, a lot of those are in litigation or some status.
All of them were in litigation.
Right.
All five.
Yes. So we're preparing for litigation. So the written materials were quite sensitive, had to be blessed by counsel. An update to one of them was the mission calling.
Which is why you're not providing handouts, right?
That's correct.
All right, just one established and we'll be established.
Okay. The Mission College Media Arts project, very, very important project. If you remember the discussion last time. Sure. If you remember the discussion.
If you plug that in, that's a microphone, but it's not connected.
All right. Okay. Okay. Is that better? If you remember, that project was currently at a kind of a stalemate with the surety who had taken over that project for the contractor who defaulted originally. We were in negotiations at that time with the surety regarding the amendment to Tinkle agreement regarding the discovered defects in the original contractor's construction. Since our last meeting, we have a signed takeover agreement amendment, and the contractor's remobilized on the project, currently stabilizing, addressing SWIP issues, and also doing the exploratory and remedial work, getting ready for a DSA submission. So they're back in action. The cessation's over on that one. So.
Back in action because you negotiated terms that he is accepting and satisfactory.
That's correct.
And what were the cost ramifications? Did we have to pay, or is the surety paying for remaining work?
It's a deferred dispute.
Okay, so we're going to finish the building and
find out.
That's correct. That's correct. So
at least we're going to finish the building.
Yeah. The approach was a cost-benefit analysis of whether to proceed to attempt to engage and not. It was determined that that was more beneficial to the district, and so they're successfully moving forward on that project. So we're certainly going to stay tuned, but it's a movement is an excellent thing on that concept. I'm sure the Mission College campus is relieved to see activity on that site. So what you found in your handouts addresses a few different things. What you'll see are samples of reports or information that the program manager provides to the facilities and planning department, Jim and Tom, for updates for different purposes, whether it's shareholder or stakeholder information or educational purposes, or for evaluation performance or comparative metrics, things along those lines. So it's kind of a sprinkling of those type of reports in here for you to take a look at. We can walk through some of them. I'll point you to the key ones. This is the packet that has the question and answer packet on the front of it, not the one with the campus COC reports on it. So I suggest we work from the back forward. This is the packet with the question and answer on the cover, not the citizens.
Is that an attachment then?
It was an attachment, and it's also.
I'm
sorry?
No, E is construction.
Yes, it's the one you're holding.
It's graphs, heavy on graphs?
Yes, a lot of graphs. A lot of graphs, a lot of bar charts.
Can you just tell us what page to look for in that?
Sure. If you flip all the way to the back, I'm looking at the last two. We'll work from the back forward. We're not going to go through all these, so please don't be afraid of starting there. I'm just going to point to a couple key ones and then solicit questions since you've had an opportunity to review them. So as I said, these reports are prepared in the course of business for different purposes, educational purposes, performance evaluation purposes, things like that. The first one I'll point out is a key metric for the district is invoice days and aging for construction. It's a critical activity for us to monitor as far as performance goes, because it has very serious impacts for contractors and particularly subcontractors' ability to pay the bills and continue being interested in pursuing LECCD work. It's a key metric for us. So what you'll see in there is average days in aging for those type of things, and you'll see the comparison. There.
It's not a very dramatic difference over time.
No.
Between 8 and 11, and the days are, right?
That's correct. Those are.
That doesn't seem like a very dramatic
difference. Put it in context, no. I mean, normal public agencies, they have a reputation to be very poor payers in all the business. Meaning, oftentimes, when certain accused have brethren in county or city have taken 60 to 90 days to pay, but let's just say it's not uncommon. What this shows you is that our program has done an exceptional job of keeping those days down. So what that does is construction is based on cash flow. So the contractors, in order to be profitable, in order to pay their bills, to pay their subs, oftentimes these subs are very small businesses and can't afford to carry payrolls. So it's important to get those dollars in their hands as soon as possible.
I was looking at the variance. It's small. The numbers, the significance you're putting out is the numbers are small.
I'm just saying, I think it's exceptional. The program should be.
How often do we bill?
I'm sorry?
How often do we get billed?
30 days.
Every 30 days?
30 days.
And so this is saying that within receiving a bill, we return a check to the contractor.
If I could just walk through the graphs. Quickly, I'll let you know.
Understand what CPM means.
Exactly. So, if I can explain it. So, this is that colorful graph that's at the back page of that handout. What that represents is average day CPM to PM. So, this is when the college project manager receives the invoice from the vendor. and provide, reviews it, approves it, and provides it to the program manager. So this is an example of a performance metric that goes to an annual CPM evaluation, or also just being able to resource different campuses based on activity. There's a lot of things that influence this, such as the level of activity on the campus and the type of billing, but this is an across-the-board comparison.
But there is some difference, but I don't know if it's significant. Small compared to 90
different
days. Sure. You have days by 16 days, and 24 days at other campuses.
Sure. And if you look for...
It still looks good.
Yeah. This is a good target, and I'll show you how it fits into the overall picture and how it affects vendors in the next graph. This is the page immediately preceding that. This is overall, the title is All Colleges Fiscal Year Average Invoice Turnaround Time in Days. It's gray and blue, and it's by quarter. So that overall payment period is what affects the vendors in the district. And you see 30 days is the target. 30-day turnaround from receiving an invoice to getting a check out the door from the program manager's office is the target. So what you're seeing is quarters back from 2010 to present on the average turnaround time for invoices. And it started at about 27 days, and if you really created a histogram on that, it's lower to about 21 on average for this preceding calendar quarter. So that's the current metric. That's the external metric. I'm sorry?
Across all the colleges, okay, and let's just take the last quarter, what percentage of time have you been below 30 days? I think it's close to 100.
I couldn't say if there was something beyond 30 days. I would guess that it's not 100%.
Okay.
I would say it's not 100%. This represents an average. This doesn't have every contributing data point.
I meant
on average, it's 21 days. Yeah, so.
And Todd, I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me. Can you talk about how many invoices you process a month? A rough estimate.
Aquatic?
I don't know.
I don't think. We have volume indicated.
You have your dollar amount, doesn't it?
Yeah, we have volume.
I didn't even play Jeopardy with you. I thought.
What is?
But I expect the numbers large.
I think it's quite large. That's why it was.
Is it 5,000?
It wouldn't be that large, would it? No, it would probably be in the hundreds. That would be my guess.
If you get a contractor's invoice, but it's backed up by subcontractor's invoice, but you know
we don't get
subcontractor's invoice, you give it to the contractor.
That's correct.
Now, we are probably paying thousands of companies a month, Elliot, but we don't have to handle each one of those.
Well, you have
some numbers. Yes. There is, while it's not individual number of invoices, there is a volume in dollars. It's called the All Colleges Quarterly Invoice Process Breakdown. The total volume, the highest peak since 2010, it is in this handout. It's called page 1 of 10. The highest peak in a quarter was $140 million worth of invoices in one quarter. It's currently trending just north of $60 million. There's kind of peaks and troughs within a program just based on project life cycle. Obviously, if it's in construction, you're contributing more towards the volume. But that's an approximation of the quantity of invoices that come through the program. The projection? It should. We don't have a projection histogram that available.
$60-70 million. Because we slowed down construction because we went through a moratorium versus ramping up and finishing on for the next 5 years. Is it going to be $60-70 million?
Yeah, that would be expected, if not slightly north of that.
Okay.
We'll probably be re-entering our 2011 volumes coming up here. It wasn't as much the moratorium as it was some DSA review times and just kind of where the projects lined up at the same time that caused the trough. But we do anticipate an uptick. So those are examples of comparative metrics that we see. The breakdown was provided campus by campus, quarter by quarter, and that's the kind of different ways we chop it, which contributes to different questions. It answers different questions. Comparative performance, volume, trend analysis, what do we need to resource things along those lines?
Look at West LA. There's a big jump in rejected. You have to go back to the first quarter of 2011 to get into the quarter. Is there something special about that?
I couldn't comment on that specifically, but that question that you asked is exactly the purpose of these charts, is to prompt those questions and go research those.
Just one more for that. No prior quarter, maybe didn't keep track of this before, has in the histogram a sub bar for a vendor. No, that is a vendor, that's open. So that's things you haven't gotten to yet, I guess. You don't show that in any prior quarter. I'm looking again at the West LA quarterly invoice process breakdown, page 10 of 10, page 8 or 7.
That's another chart. Page 7 of 10, so fiscal year average invoice turnaround time being graph?
Quarterly invoice process breakdown for West LA College.
Like this,
down
the back. It's the back page or
the
back handout.
Okay. Last page of that one.
And I raised the question about the red, and I'm raising the question about the green. For some reason, this is the only quarter of the roughly 15 quarters in half year where there was an open category. Is that a new category you've added, or does it represent?
No, open means unresolved or pending.
Yes, but that, so, but the, if I look at this, it says there really weren't any in the prior 2.5 years. There weren't any unresolved. Now there certainly is.
It's a function of time. As time passes, they get resolved, and so you'd expect the more open invoices in an immediately preceding quarter.
And that's what we're likely to have.
Yes. This will turn blue. Okay.
There'd be a problem if there were greens all the way back.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry, because it's got my name on it. Next time this chart is produced. Next time this chart is produced, 2013 first quarter will be history, not current. And that green bar will disappear because open quarters will have been resolved.
As it has been over prior quarters.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, this is a snapshot in time, and your current quarter will predominantly be open. You'll always capture things as a snapshot of stuff you're working on currently.
We're still, the green bar says we're still conducting business related to the first quarter of 2013.
Correct. Yeah, so the purpose of the graph as a performance metric, we wouldn't look at the current open ones because it's not really a measure of anything. But it's the historical trending.
Did we take you off the discussion of the last meeting's top five? Did you discuss all of those?
The only update I had was to that particular item.
So the three we did not discuss, there was not an update.
No,
I didn't. That hasn't been resolved.
There's been no major update to the status of those that I can report on. Okay, so that's the graphs. I'd solicit comments while we're in them right now from people who have questions regarding that, or we can move to some other sections.
Are you referring to the whole stack of charts?
Well, at least with the invoice days and aging metrics.
Okay, as opposed to some of the other charts?
Yeah.
You're going to talk about the changeover?
We'll touch on that now. Okay, so with the change with the invoicing metrics, you'll note the footer is going to indicate the data range of these things. The days in aging goes back to 2010. It's a database that's been created and tracked along those lines since that time. The change order causation breakdown, which you'll see predominantly as pie. I'm not on a particular page yet.
Right.
Yeah.
When you get to it, let us know.
I will. The pie charts are predominantly the change order causation characterizations. Those are driven from data from November 2012, which is not long ago, just over a quarter and change to now. So please keep that in mind, but it's something that we're going to track, and it's critical to the board and to the district and facilities planning and development moving forward.
But is this the sort of thing you're discussing?
That's correct. The tricolor graphs that describe change order origin by the three typical sources, which are design issues, which can be bid package problems, owner-initiated changes, and unforeseen conditions. So,
now, regarding owner-initiated changes, when I went through this, I was impressed, but not in a positive way, how large a percentage of the changes were owner-initiated. And perhaps I don't understand owner-initiated, but the take of mine was, I'm sorry to say this, but some of the things that were written up in the LA Times some time ago, where one college decided that its initial placement of the windmills, was inappropriate, because that should really be a parking lot, and those were really located. Is that the sort of thing we're talking about? Does that, to me, sound like a legitimate purpose?
Well, in that particular example,
is that representative?
I think we can use that example as indicative. In that example, it was not processed as a change order. So in that case, it won't feed the change order metrics.
Okay, so
can
you give us examples of the sort of things that are in owner-initiated?
An example of an owner-initiated change order is at East LA College, an emergency enunciator system was decided to be installed campus-wide as a campus standard based on events that had occurred, and not at East LA, but nationally. So that became an owner-initiated change to existing contracts where they said, here's the standard system, have it installed for projects in process, change order into the contract to make sure it's installed, which would be less expensive and less risk than having a new contractor install it after they're done. So that's an example of an owner-initiated change.
So that was in response to a national movement to have such an enunciator?
It was more of a national incident that prompted security concerns on campus.
My question was, therefore, did that happen in every college?
It did not, no.
No, we don't have district standards at this point. We have college standards. Each college makes decisions on what they're going to have on their particular campus.
I can see where there are things between the campuses. Campuses are not the same, you know, in many respects. But if there is wisdom that says an enunciator of this kind is appropriate for public buildings, it's the sort of thing that I would expect to see on all the campuses.
Yes, sir.
But there's no way of enforcing that at the district level or discussing it?
I'm certain we can discuss it.
It seems to me if there's something that relates to safety, and there's a genuine basis for it, it's applicable to all the campuses, then it should be enforced somehow on the campuses. Would the new central management arrangement you have make that happen?
No, sir.
If I may, we are actually in the process of doing exactly what you're talking about. The Vice Presidents for Administrative Services have taken this initiative and are looking at several systems that would create a district-wide standard and that they would then proceed.
Under the present governance that exists, is it possible for any college to say, no, I'm not going to do it? I'm not going to use that enunciator system that provides the property of safety for the campus.
It's possible, not likely. Right now, there is agreement that we should have all one system. One is the efficiency, and two is cost. And so we are in the process of investigating several systems and looking at issuing a district-wide RFP.
Okay. So the possibility exists that something we rejected, so I have a request of you.
Go ahead.
If any campus rejects such a thing, would you let us know? It relates to construction. I'm not going to make the argument, okay? If it relates to construction, what's worse than that is a safety matter.
Not all of the purchases will be under the bond program because some of the expenditures will already have been made. So the colleges will be paying for their systems in various different methods. Some of them may use general funds, some of them may use bond funds, as is the case at East LA.
So that diversity then.
I have a different question. That's such a justifiable change order. It's a little bit like motherhood and apple pie. In terms of owner initiated, have there been instances where those have been required because of poor advanced planning or whimsical approaches to, I want this now because I'm getting this building and
I won't let Todd answer that one. I'll answer that one, and I'll say most definitely. I'm sure there has. It's been a long program, and you know, there's been the turnover at the president's seat where the buck kind of stops on the approval of some of these things. It's been numerous, so I'm sure there has been. And that's one thing we can struggle with, quite honestly, is there's a 10%, we've self-mandated 10% change order limit that we've given ourselves. And we have to do is make people realize at the project level or at the campus level that that 10% is not there to be spent. It's there in case of problems or issues that come up or that arise. It's not your wish list, and because we've got extra money on it doesn't mean you get a gold plated Komodo.
I had a friend who built a federal courthouse one time, and once it was under construction, and the judges started walking from behind.
Absolutely, the judges are the worst.
Easy. Mr. Chairman, I'm in the corner. I don't think you see me.
No, I'd like to finish my comment first.
There were two things here that are kind of outstanding. There's a Pierce College, I'm not picking any colleges. There's a total budget, 20% is in this category. In the case of Electric Tech, it's 82% of the changes of the total, a little over $2 million. It's different from campus to campus, and some seem to be.
Yeah, we've only been tracking these since November, Elliot. So let me tell you why we're tracking them. We have CPMs at every campus. CPMs are required. Three things that are important in construction are scope, schedule, and budget. We often encourage them in the industry as a time, the dime, and the shine. That's qualities in there as well. Part of that CPM's job is to control their campus, even though they believe that they don't have the power to control their campus. They can certainly guide them to not spend money on things that are frivolous or whimsical. That is a grade we will be creating these CPM firms on in the future. And they can scream all day long that the campus made me do it, but that argument only works for a little while.
What is the concept? What are the consequences of getting a low grade if you're a CPM?
Then your replacement gets the opportunity to see if they can do a little bit better.
Oh, is that severe, too?
But, you know, it's not that black and white. Obviously, we're going to look into why it's so high. There may be an extenuating circumstance that drove it up. I mean, it's not draconian. It's just stating that those are some of the metrics that we're going to be looking at for the performance of those CPM firms. And determine whether there's
the frivolous changes, there will be consequences. That's what
I can't control frivolous changes.
No, where there have been frivolous changes, you are grading the CPM and there will be consequences for that CPM.
I will ask them why bring my attention, because they're really in a bad spot. They've got two bosses. They have a meeting on them, and they're going to have the college presidents, and they want to go ahead.
But I'm looking for a statement from somebody in authority that says where there have been frivolous changes, which have been in fact been determined fairly to be frivolous, there will be consequences on the institution and the person responsible for those changes.
I think that what needs to be clear is when you start pointing out the source of the changes, it oftentimes cures the problem. It's not so much that I'm going to fire you, especially if you've got a project manager who is responsible to a very senior person within the college who is making these changes, who can't really hold that project manager responsible and fire them. But once you have exposed this to the light of day, at least you know where the changes are coming from. And then it's a situation that has to be handled. Where changes get lost is when nobody knows exactly how they're getting approved and it's all done, and there's effect over changes, woof, and it's gone, and it's done, and the budget's exceeded, but it's over with.
Where I've seen a weakness in the past is the fact that we don't have a district standard. Every college has different standards. Every college with these different standards updates their standards regularly. Now, if you had a district-wide standard, you would control it. You would oftentimes freeze design updates at DDs or SDs or CDs. I don't care what you decide it's going to be. At a certain point in the design where you don't change things anymore. What we've seen is that people continue to change things as they update standards, and that's added a tremendous cost on several projects. That's something that I think we can control. I think once we, if we can get a district standard together or agreement on some of these things, or at least holds on design and certain rules, I mean, when we do it, we can give our CPMs, at least by establishing a policy or procedure, something to discuss with their president, saying, well, it's not our procedure, it's not the district's policy to do this. If we're doing this, we're doing this outside the bounds of the policy. And then that's fine, and the president knocked it off.
David, you have a question?
Yeah, we talked about this last meeting, and there was concrete ideas that were on the table. I don't think holding the CCAMs necessarily is going to cost down. They have no authority, but at the end of the day, they're bound by what the college decides. So we talked about the grade being applicable to the evaluation of the presidents, who really are the only people on campus as a kind of decider on changes as the place where we might address some of these costs. But if the college, through shared governance, decides to make a change, and the person who's administering the campus program's hands are bound, the college president is the kind of last stop before any decision is then made and actions and budgets are then affected by any changes. So that's what we talked about at the last meeting as a way to start to address is to not just grade the CPM, but potentially to grade, if you will, the president. As you can see from the disparity, some college campus presidents are better at it, some aren't. Sometimes their hands are tied by necessity or circumstance. But that's where I think the rubber would hit the road for change orders. That's only an accountable part of this process.
That's the chancellor's level, this is Nabil.
Yeah. You know, technically, the president does make these decisions, and, you know, the buck does stop here. But on the other hand, we do have to make decisions that not only fit into the picture, a snapshot over a five-month period, if that's what this is, maybe a four-month period, that may, in fact, reflect a single decision, sizable perhaps in some cases, small in others, given the disparity in numbers here. But what we are responsible for also is not just the appearance of, oh, look how big the red part is, but 20 years from now, will we still be able to use this building as constructed, or did we hold our, you know, stick to our guns and construct something as designed that the institution has learned as it started seeing it developing wasn't going to work for what we
but
do?
But the BOI, the justification you provided to the board in some cases would be part of the determination of not just that it's a change, but whether it was frivolous or reasonable, or there's poor planning.
And speaking from the locus of this frivolity, obviously, because the decision technically is made by the president, even though, you know, as a political function, it's really being guided from two different directions, three now, seeing that this board is clearly choosing to get into the design criteria. That is a balance that has to be made in light of what will work, and you know, I think we'd be careful to define frivolity with more than just one word, but a conversation. You know, what is frivolous to perhaps me may make a huge difference to the teaching and learning endeavor. So I would hope we wouldn't just look at the numbers and say, well, that's a large percentage, therefore there's a lot of frivolity going on. If it is appropriate to provide explanations, I can tell you having these charts raises the questions for us to have our internal conversations, Jim and I, and Jim and the other eight presidents, can have conversations about this data, and the data does drive conversations. These data are question marks, these are not answers, I just want to say.
But
that.
They lead to the pursuit of an answer, and that's what you're explaining. The answer should be a considered one,
yes.
Right? And I don't think any of us would disagree with that. But if you look at a number, like another chart here, $32 million, and 65% of that amount must be something like $20 million, our owner initiative, it's worth exploring.
Then, first of all, the chart you're looking at is all colleges.
Yes, it is.
And one college, Southwest, makes up three quarters of the total.
Right.
Or actually, considerably closer. I was just wondering, it would seem that the total amount of these change orders in any particular category would have a huge effect. I mean, you could have a change order that was frivolous, but it was $4 or $200 or something. But when you, if you have a change order grouping that's in millions, and it's under owner initiated, you really want to know. I want to know where did $22 million in change orders come from the total budget of construction that was on that particular campus. This gives you, you're right, it raises a lot of questions. But this chart doesn't give me the answers I think this committee should have. Like, why is it that big for one particular campus?
And then maybe
in total cost, not in percentages.
Yeah, that's why we do include the total dollar amount at the base of the proportion. And that's where you got the metric from. You see the pie chart with the breakup by percentage, and at the base it says total, which is the volume of change orders at right under the pie chart. So it's right here.
Yeah, that's
yeah. So that's the origin.
That's the $22 million.
Yeah, I think as the committee agrees that this prompts the question, these are prepared for facilities planning and development, consumption and purpose for discussions with the campuses and it's contributing.
Actually, we present this data, and I'm not giving you an our advice to you, which probably put in the minutes because I'm making, is that you take this further and see if, in fact, construction money is being used wisely. And that is our charge. That is the charge.
And now that you're to see in the future, you've heard me say this already, this is a pretty small data set. And some of it, I mean, obviously that's all-encompassing, but there's smaller data sets that we've only been tracking since you know, a period on. You'll see more of this coming forward with regards to the metrics, because that's the only way I get to ask questions is I'm not out on every job every day. And some of this stuff might have a great story behind it, but I need to know where it is so I can start asking those questions. So only have the discussion at the college.
Great that the basis for the questions
and the CPMs. And one of the reasons I said the CPMs and holding them a little accountable for some of the scope was that you gotta protect yourself from the owner sometimes. You know, I mean, even if you're a service person, you know, you got to protect the owner from themselves and not let them get into too much trouble down the road by making sure they know how much money they have, how much they have left. That you're making a really hard decision by wanting this because this means you're not going to get that. So when I say you control the scope, you help them understand, you help your client understand exactly what this means if you want that toilet, that cold-plated toilet. Thank you.
So the question is, of these forms, which are very good and there's a lot of questions and so forth, all of the schools get these? So all of the oversight committees in each college sees this for their own college. So that should be where a lot of questions comes from the school itself. If they, for example, if whatever college has it at the oversight committee, the president's there, the team of people are there, the construction. So questions should come up and explanations, which delves into the kinds of differences at schools or the differences of projects that would elicit more changes or fewer changes or frivolous or not. And so they would have that. You would have more knowledge of what's going on, I think, the presidents would. I think the pressure, if the word is pressure, I'm not sure, but it's coming from the committee, it's coming from the community and the people there. What does this mean, you know, for us? And then that is transmitted to this committee as this is what goes on and blah, 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 and so forth. Is that not what this would be for? And have these been coming out on a regular basis? Or is this new, these diagrams?
I'm not entirely sure who...
Or information. I'm not saying they're not out there. I may have not seen them.
The information has been out.
In terms of what we have seen, this, in my report, is the first presentation of this data, and I compliment everybody for doing that. You know,
but I was talking about like the schools, the colleges. Have these been coming to the colleges along?
We've been getting the information in a different format, but it's always highlighted. But I would say this, the information's there, we talk about it. I would say it's been so much better. I served on the bottom of the campus for almost 7 years. It has been so much better. This might be because our fifth president. Recently, under Chris, we have the transparency finally. We're asking these questions. But most of the time, like when you're an interim president and the shared governance structure says we want purple, not blue, and that is a vital change and it goes through the process, the president will not veto it because really what's the in it for them? There's a budget, 10%. There is a lot of frivolity that gets approved that I think, and I'm not speaking for him, that we push through, even though at the Citizens Committee we're asking that question. This happened in the MLK library. Why are we doing X? I remember this conversation, and it took forever. The baseboard was coming unglued, and they wanted to switch out the baseboard. And we had this whole conversation. No, it just needs a new adhesive, but we switched out the baseboard. It's like 5 years ago. My point is only the information comes out, at least it's sitting in a different format, and we've been talking about it for at least how long have you been here? 4 years.
But then that information, however it's coming, eventually should show through. I mean, if there's a lot of that going on, it should be coming through, and the central office would be knowing about it somehow.
Just to make an observation from West LA College, the reporting at West LA College, as well as the reporting here, is vastly improved. Okay, the last couple of years, I would say it's getting better and better. Your description of how you would use this data to try within the looseness of the governance structure that is characterized by a public institution, even worse, a university public institution, is to put whatever social pressures and other means you may have to first understand what problems are, and two, if some of them are consequences and are bad exemplars which should not be done in the future, that will be pointed out, and hopefully that will have a very effective effect. Insofar as specific effect is concerned, nobody is willing to commit what the specific effect will be because it's not in the nature of the organization. I will see to it that these comments are in the minutes.
Back to Southwest, $22 million again. That's an entire new building. That's not just change orders. You could build another campus project for $22 million. Is this from one major source? Is it made up of 100 different change orders that total $22 million? Do you have any idea?
I don't have the composition by campus at our fingertips. This is obviously backed up by all the specific detail. One thing I would mention, though, that for purposes of the metric, what you want to measure is how far are you from where you started. So these are reported on an absolute value basis, which I know you know what this means, Mr. Slauson, but for the benefit of the committee, absolute value, if you increase 5% and decrease 5%, you're 10% away from where you started, even though you're at a net zero cost-wise. So these are represented on an absolute value basis because you want to measure the amount of change, not necessarily where you are with regard to budget. So there can be a lot of add and subtract within these numbers.
But we don't know from this whether what you just described
is the case.
Got us back to zero, or if we're $22 million in the hole.
You're correct. This report does not tell you that.
But it's built up from smaller pieces of data.
Absolutely.
Which you have, and which one reviewed provide the answer to that question.
Right. So the overall district-wide look says, let's look at Southwest. Southwest generates 40 pages of change order proposal level, which composes the change order itself, detail, sort by size, and then pay attention to the largest ones. That's the next step that this drives.
Can you bring us the data that supports each one of the campuses' total change orders? This is just from November of last year, so we're not talking from the inception of the overall building program. We're talking about 5 months. So
I can't commit, but we'll be talking about program manager transition in just a second.
Todd, on that transition is, or for Southwest, for instance, are you saying that $22 million that Dick's were asking about is from November forward?
That's correct.
Would it include the are we seeing the spike on that one because of SOCA and the credit change order that we took on that?
Potentially, in fact,
I think we took a credit change order to the tune of about $15 million.
I'm
so
not
that
sure
could be.
Included.
You don't know if it's included.
I think it's on the main first.
That's fine, but that's the data I'd like to see. And I know it doesn't come through the end of April. It's what, probably through January or February, March, November 2012 until through March.
Through March.
Yeah, these will run at the end of March, first quarter.
Okay.
And I'm going to chance one of you to have your hand up. Just one small comment. Please understand, we do appreciate what you're doing. We think it's very useful. We think there are additional steps. And within the limitations of the institution, I'm sure you're going to take follow-up steps that are positive to address these things. So please understand where we're coming from. We appreciate it. This is really good stuff. Chance, I'm sorry.
Just a few comments. The longer serving members of this body remember that the change order issue was a dominant part of the report of the building program review committee. It studied some of the perceived deficiencies in the program, and this one, I wouldn't say it was featured front and center, but it was featured. And the board is apt, the board of trustees is apt to organizationally to attempt to consider that. One of the things that, as I listened to this conversation and hearing David's earlier comments about this body's earlier treatment of change bugs, I think I was in Sacramento when we met last, so I didn't hear that discussion. But I think there's an emerging question of role definition here, if I may say.
Please.
That if, in fact, this is something that you feel should be a part of your charge, and indeed it's arguable that it is, I would want to ensure that you've got the proper foundation. I don't mean in a condescending way. Here's what I mean. We heard one example relating to security. And while I frowned on a number of the examples of change orders that I saw during the life of that review panel, some are legitimate.
Yeah.
For example, if a faculty decides and wants to emphasize more experiential learning in a lecture, it's going to have a different view of how their laboratories are constructed. Now, that's, in my mind, better than a new president who says, I'm going to reject the earlier president's point of view because this is now my building. There's a little of both of those. So what I would say is if you're farming up as a group to make a formal recommendation to the Board of Trustees, I would hope that you get the proper, I'll use this now, schooling in this committee about what change order examples are beyond the one, the appropriate one that Tom just said. Because I can assure you this is an interest of the board because it's taxpayer money being spent in ways that may be inappropriate. So again, I don't know where you were before. You mentioned a previous discussion, but I would hope that if you're moving toward a recommendation through me to the board, that you're grounded in the definitional side of this, as well as to Richard's point, the examples that warrant further review.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Along that line, I'm concerned. I don't think it's our role to determine validity of change orders. I think our role is to determine the efficiency and the appropriateness and the thoroughness of the change order review process.
I think that's what we're doing.
And I think that's the direction we're on. Whether or not a school group decides to do what you talked about, which I totally understand, but I'm sure reasoning there. A change, that's really not our position to make a determination.
We should not be evaluating specifics of these things. We're trying to ensure that there's a process that we have confidence in that's taking place to act within the community in a proper way and address what might be inappropriate uses of money.
Right. So I think our exposure to the process is important, but other than that, I don't think we should get deeply involved.
I'm looking at we're talking about 22 million in change order. I'm looking at the monthly report from Southwest College, and I'm wondering why this 22 million is not reflected somewhere on the monthly report. I'm not very ignorant about how these things are done, but I'm looking through this and I'm seeing something like, construction was halted while the design build team reassessed the structural integrity of the existing building. Now, is that a factor change? I'm sure there are several other things. I just read this pretty quickly. Also, not to change the subject, but to change the subject slightly, we have on this committee representatives from all the campuses. What is the role of the district oversight committee representative from a campus in working with the campus oversight committee to bring back to us information that we don't know?
Well, we are supposed to serve as bridges to the campuses we represent.
How?
And this meeting, attend the meeting at the campus itself, you see that there's information that's not flowing back and forth as should be. You pass on ideas that happen in one meeting to the second. That is part of your role.
Well, you know, I can cop out because I'm not assigned to any particular campus, but I do know several of the campuses pretty well.
But for every campus, there is a representative.
I know that, but what I'm saying is here you show 22 million in change orders, and I'm wondering if the campus representative has been informed about this and is doing at any of the reps from any of the campuses where with our change orders, what they know about what's going on.
So let's go around the table. The West LAC, I'm very well informed. Okay, maybe not on all the specifics of every one, but I have a very good picture of what's going on with construction.
All right.
Okay, why let, do you want to go around the table?
No, I just want to know, why isn't this $22 million represented in the monthly report, or am I missing?
If I could just chime in, it's a monthly report is a monthly report in the last preceding 30 days. These reports, as you see, is data from November 2012 to present, which would be a function of 7 months worth of activity.
I'd like to have a breakdown of what that $22 million is. You're talking about owner initiated. That doesn't mean a thing.
That's permissible, but David, okay, prior to get a breakdown of these things for the next meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So that has been requested.
Okay.
Please continue. You're doing a great job, Tom. I'm sorry that so dynamic.
That's the
back to the thing about the campus representatives. What do they know about what's going on?
I get a report. I looked at the West LA version of this report, and I looked at them and analyzed them. They are very similar to the reports I get on the local campus. I can stop. Anybody else wants to speak to that? Who else feels that's the case?
That you get
raise your hands.
Yeah.
Who does not feel that's the case? Okay, so those who chose to speak feel that's the case.
Well, we don't have representatives from
no.
the college.
So, that, I know, right. So you've got 409, including the Southwest.
I think that's
a good point.
That's a good point.
Okay.
Please continue.
Just one final note on change orders. For a number of years now, I'd say about 2.5 to 3 years, we've expanded the facilities planning and development board agenda items to break down these causations in the agenda item. When change orders go to board, they're characterized by one of these three causation levels.
Board of
Trustees. The Board of Trustees. So there is transparency on that at that level, and obviously at each Board of Trustees meeting, presidents in attendance to see these, and we've noticed some trending that's created a lot of transparency and rigor, I would say. So that's just worth noting, is that type of breakdown is in front of the board on a monthly basis. Moving forward, the schedule, what you see in here, this is the schedule breakdown, project by project. It's a great deal of detail.
This is the area management format.
Yes, this is this Excel looking output sheet. With the green highlighting periodically, not the bar chart, but the status, they're called construction progress breakdown. So this is very detailed. You see this on a project by project level, and what this brings your attention to are projects that are currently following schedule for the milestone that they're in. So,
can I ask you a question about what baseline means?
Yes. Yeah, the baseline is an established, and I've got Julio Fujihara here too.
It's a prior established plan.
It was an established baseline time plan. Yeah, I was going to ask Julio what date that was.
November 2011.
So November 2011, a comprehensive rebaselining establishment was created, and that's what this is measuring against.
That's my question. Are you measuring against it?
Yes. So when you see the two.
Okay. The dates then show us what was in the baseline plan versus what is in the current plan.
That's for each project. You see the baseline row.
Yes.
That's what was established in 2011, and the current is the actual scheduled date that's showing in the campus's peak their critical path schedule. So highlighted green shows that they're at or ahead of schedule, and those that are not highlighted are not on that original schedule.
What is the aim?
Actual. It means actual date. So that's another reference point.
And the ones in the baseline do not have a date?
If the baseline does not have the date and there's a current date, that means they're the same date.
More generally, going through this, I mean, some of the data, could you provide a glossary next time? There are terms that are only mentioned in as acronyms, some of those terms that I don't understand. Not now, but, you know.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. A is actual. The green is on target. You see that top right. So, as I said, that's a very granular, non-rolled-up way of reporting. But if you have a specific project that you have a question about or you want to see an overall highlighting of on-target projects, that's the purpose of that report.
Thank you.
And then the last report that's in there is the report you see every quarter or every meeting, which is the baseline cost and budget bar chart. That's this. It shows actual performance and actual projection of completion of the milestone against against the current schedule.
Try and follow you, even if we read these things that sometimes difficult. If you can think of some way of having a master admonition for what you would provide, and then you could say, now we're on page 23, then you know it would be more the exchange of information would be more efficient.
Yes, sir.
Well, but the different sections are the same.
It's not fully indexed.
It's not a unique, as we say in the game, only a more transformation that you can do. Could I ask you some questions at page 12 of the LACC Building Program? And lo and behold, it's West LA College. I know most about that, so don't take it as an easy thing. Can you get to that as page 12 of that package, and it is the liability management chart?
Yes, sir.
Now, there's a couple of things I noticed. First of all, when you look at budget variance on this chart, okay, it's expressed in dollars. On other charts, it's expressed as a percentage. Okay, so both are valuable. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but on the other hand, it would be useful. Well, you can do what you want. To me, I find it would be useful, but maybe others don't. The thing that I think is significant and not present are the sums in these columns. The way you express these things in dollars, for example, look at the budget variance that's expressed in dollars on this chart. It would be interesting to compare the total budget variance, which would be a net thing, since these are not moving the numbers, against the total budget. Yeah. That would be an indicator. Maybe it's there and I missed it.
It's not here, but what we try not to do is create redundant reports to other reports that we publish, and the dashboard report, which is posted monthly.
As we discussed this year, we use this meeting. I don't have a dashboard report to look at. And we're trying to communicate. So even though it's redundant, that means it's useful to have it, so we can communicate best.
Understood. Yeah, we've kind of discussed how much of a dashboard we should publish for this meeting, reprint and circulate, and it's been a topic of debate over the years. We can, you know, anything can be requested of facilities planning and development, and it'll be provided to the committee, but it is a voluminous report, so.
Well, I'm not asking for a voluminous report. I'm asking just some of these columns to sum. So, for example, if you sum the budget variance of each of the projects toward numbers of net budget variance, at West LA College.
Understood.
It's useful in the conversation. So, and the same thing is true of budget, and the same thing is true of contracted, and the same thing is true of estimate conclusion. It just facilitates communication. The other thing is, it's interesting to look at the Watson Center. Of course, I know from our meetings with you, you know, some of the changes that have taken place there, but it's interesting to see how well it's revealed here. When you look at the current and you look at the baseline is a fiction in the sense that it never really got enacted and never was money for it. And that happened in the prior administration. But then if I look at the schedule variance line, okay, for the Watson Center, it's huge. It's like 18 months. 18 months behind schedule if I read this literally, okay. And I think there are reasons for that. And by the way, it's only now in programming and design, and it will be for most of another year. But I think there's a reason for it. And the reason for it is that they're going tremendous change. The reason for it is that the budget variance, the original plan, relative to the original plan, was something like $15 million. It's huge. Okay, so they're going through a lot of replannings. I know that. Everybody here doesn't know that. That's a minus.
To respond to that, and you're not going to like this answer, but on the project level dashboard report, there's a narrative that provides the status of the project that you can refer back to and see the update.
I have the background on this. So I guess I'm just alerting my fellow members of the committee when you look at these things, truth is not only apparent, and things need to be discussed.
Right. This is... And this doesn't speak against your question, but this is published and put on the website contemporaneously and right next to the dashboard report. So when this summary prompts an interest in a particular project, you can refer to that project level dashboard for the monthly updated narrative on project status.
I think what you're getting at, Ellen, is probably the obvious, which is every project has a story.
That's right.
And if we had all the stories, I mean, I know it's a lot of money, not a paper we get to. If we had every project story, we couldn't read them, so we'd lose the detail. And which gets kind of back to what we were talking about before, which I love, this idea of the five worst problems, projects that can't get design resolution, problems that are designed in way over budget, that sort of thing. I can't, I don't think the other members of the committee can't spend time on every story at every campus and every project. So as informational as this information is, these summaries are for me, I really need your help to pick out the juicy stories. And that may be a juicy story, maybe not, of where things might be going wrong.
Well, in the future, you'll see, we'll keep rolling out. Some of these reports are going to be, we'll take them and put together this aggregate report that's not a, you know, a phone book. But it's a snapshot where you can look at it and gives you enough information to ask questions. If you see deviations from baselines, if you see strange $22 million owner requested changes, things of that nature that will they'll bring to light. In addition, I never want to be the senior guy with a secret, so I'll be raising my hand to let you know if we've got some problems out there, and I'm more than happy to share all of those with you, but it would take days. So we'll stay with, if you're okay with, stay with the kind of the five featured each month, updates along with those, and then the new, if any of the new ones join them, and try to keep it to a minimum.
I want to continue with this. This is interesting to look at, but and I haven't gone through it in depth, but nothing really jumps out to me here.
Well, it's like, I don't know what to make. Okay, and there's going back to West LA College again, and I think this is just a typo of the equivalent of it. You look at the career education building, the data says 76% completed. Okay, there's even a budget variance, but if you look at the actual data, it says it's not being started. There's no timeline against the current program. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's misrepresented. You know, it's an error sometimes.
I don't believe it's
maybe not
error.
Yeah.
Okay. Bill might want to comment on that.
If I can comment on that. We have an interesting dynamic here in that I happen to be the president from the college whose oversight committee Elliot sits on. And so I think you see a very healthy exchange that I'm hoping each college representative is having at their college. And so the timelines here, we actually have essentially dual timelines for this particular project because some renovation was made in that building previously to make it reasonably habitable while further construction was done. There will be a second phase or a future phase that hasn't really even been designed at this point for further renovation in this project after other projects have been completed and the current residents have moved out. In thinking about, well, why did we stop? Being a little more deeply engaged in this, I go, well, because otherwise we would have had to move everybody out of this building that's usable, rent or lease extra space to house everybody, and then remodel a building that doesn't need to be remodeled immediately. So it's a question of phasing our projects. Now, I'm okay with this explanation today. By our next meeting, of course, we have updated information that will make everything I just said very simplistic. But Elliot doesn't have that because we haven't had our next meeting and we haven't actually made the decisions that will get us there. What would be really problematic is if Elliot shows up here and goes, there's a project on here and it's a $50 million project, I've never heard of it, where did this come from? And I would expect that would happen from any of you who look at this data. I've asked questions about this at my college, and they don't tell me or they don't know. For instance, the earlier example of the Watson Center, I think Elliot would be very alarmed if we were in fact on track with that project because we're not building it. So it is appropriate that project be behind schedule. We will do something very different. And he will know about it before there's new data coming from this body. So my suggestion is hopefully this will be the place that the college rep will raise their hand and say, I don't know the backstory behind the information that's being reported on my college. And that would be a big signal to, you know, to the board as a whole, and to Jim and to Todd and everybody else, that there is that disconnect, that this body is in fact here to guard against.
And the question for our next meeting when we have it is about $500 million left, according to this, between expended and estimated completion. Is that sufficient for the future plan for this building? We can discuss that at our meeting.
And I would, the quick answer is, under the current plans, yes.
Okay, thank you.
But we're going to be changing our plans.
Now, back to the Big Five. I requested that originally. I think it's a good idea. What you commented on so far in this meeting is we had Big Five last time. The status of two has changed. Here's the status of those two. Okay. Are there any other new problems that you would discuss that are of that magnitude? Instead of keeping the count of five, are there any other additional ones that you stay up at night and worry about?
Keep the
two or three more, because again, focusing on the top problems is a way of concentrating on the importance. I agree.
I think it'd be worthwhile to talk about briefly the construction incident we had, in as much as we can legally, and just to make them aware of it in case they hear.
Sure. There was an incident at East LA College. This was a safety incident, very severe incident regarding an electrical feed. This was the science and math footprint, which is right now in a demolition phase, demolition and temporary electrical facilities. Apparently, and this is just based on our initial report and investigation, is still an open issue. There was a wiring problem, an incorrectly wired panel that was fed to some buildings by a contractor that caused a short circuit when a maintenance worker opened the panel and attempted to work on the panel. It appears that the disconnect didn't serve its purpose based on the way the system was wired. The maintenance worker was injured, went to the hospital, recovered relatively quickly, did suffer burns. It's called an arc flash incident, when a large voltage short circuit occurs, and it's quite an explosion. And it's something that we've trained on and worked against. Protective equipment and procedures have been deployed to all the campuses some years ago. This employee didn't appear to be wearing that PPE or follow the procedures, but the miswiring was cause for us to immediately demobilize the contractor. Again, it's still under investigation. We don't have a conclusion. The individual is recovering and appears to be able to make a full recovery. But that contractor has been fully demobilized from the site, and a replacement contractor was brought in to repair that work.
And in terms of keeping you up at night, there's nothing to keep you up at night more than having somebody hurt in the project. Yep. Our industry safety is the number one priority no matter what we're doing. We take extraordinary means in many cases to ensure that nobody gets hurt. We want people to go home tired. We want them to go home and their families. So this is it's extremely, extremely painful.
On an emotional level, of course, you're right. I should have said, keep you up at night. It's a construction money, construction progress.
Okay. Okay.
Not human dimension.
Well, that's something I wanted Todd to speak about. I guess there's nothing more serious over.
On our top five list, if we have something, for instance, where we reach an agreement for the contractor to go back to work, and it will be resolved, the numerical part will be resolved later, I guess let's drop that off our top five list and replace it with
a new
something
one.
Else.
Yeah.
So we kind of keep those.
Would that up with any of the five that were discussed today in the original top five? Have any of those resolved to the point where it should be replaced by the next problem?
No.
I think the mission one you talked about, we're back to work on that. We're back to work and we're moving forward. We know there's going to be an issue at the end of this. We're not done, but we've got things back in motion. That building's going to get constructed. I think maybe now would be a time where we would say, okay, that's on hold, but then hold in. We'll talk, we'll be coming back to you in a year. when we get a letter for a claim for $12 million.
I think those issues that eventually are just going to be resolved by litigation or contract or negotiations or something like that, we ought to then replace them with something new so we understand what's going on. Otherwise, the top five is going to be pretty stagnant because they're not going to get solved from one meeting to another.
If the question was, were there any additional ones, the answer is no.
But probably by next time, when you take that one that is in the process of resolution, you might have another one substitute for that.
We have no shortage of problems.
Well, no, and the notion of knowing the most important, given how limited time and expertise you might use it.
Okay. I defer with regard to time. I know you've taken a long time, but there's only two other sections left. What you'll see is program additions and refinements and over the preceding several years. It's a summary. It's kind of the balance of the good news versus bad news. What that is kind of a retrospective of what modifications have been made and what areas of focus regarding refinements have occurred on the bond program over the preceding several years. That's correct. We're moving towards the front, and the first underlying sentence is progressive programs, additions, and refinements.
Very good. Very good. That's why I asked
for the question. Okay. And I'll solicit any questions at the end, but we'll move past that right now. And then the cover sheet, the front sheet of the package, was the quality management question and answer. And I think that goes to the Chancellor's suggestion about creating a foundation of understanding and process for somewhat detailed construction-related processes, means and methods and procedures, and areas of responsibility that we would provide to facilities and planning and development for board education purposes, for shareholder education purposes at the campuses, and also the FPD might use it for committees like this in this case. So at that point, I would conclude my side of it and respond to any remaining questions.
Not only for the package, but the front end was unique. I haven't seen something like that. I can't believe that. Not that you haven't mentioned a lot of these before, in extenso in one place.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, I don't know if you want me to hit the next issue on the agenda, please. The next bullet on the agenda has to do with construction alternatives. And when we were agendizing this, it had to do, what we were talking about alternatives a lot was with delivery methods. Speaking with Elliot and the other folks, it was apparent that the litigiousness, that's a word, of our business was not yet known by many folks and didn't realize how many attorneys are actually involved in getting our jobs done, unfortunately. In doing that, oftentimes a lot of the driver is either cost or time. In fact, it's always cost or time. And determining whether there's merit, and then if there's merit, what's it want? And we can argue for days and days about it and pay lots of guys and lots of my students a lot of money, and eventually nobody wins except for the attorneys. So in doing that, we as public sector facilities guys, if you will, have been looking for ways around this for years and years and years. Richard pointed out that the lump sum low bid way that we do work was driven, when did you say the public contract code came into effect in California? In the 20s. So you can imagine a public sector employee in 1910 is going to do a waterworks project, and he picks Joe's construction company because Joe's his brother-in-law, right? So the easiest way to get rid of that is to put into effect low bid lump sum. So everybody puts in sealed secret bids. Nobody knows what the price is that their opponent is putting in. And they're open publicly in front of an audience. At that time, if the lowest bid is a responsible bidder, and it's very hard not to be responsible, he is selected to do the work. Now that sounds, in theory, it's fabulous, but what occurs oftentimes, especially in hard times over the last 4 years or so, is people need that money, they need that cash flow. They're willing to take on a job sometimes that they can't finish for the money that they promised. And they're doing it to keep that cash flow, keep that company above board, because they're betting on the come for several other jobs. And it is a lot of speculation. So when the money doesn't start coming, oftentimes they look for other reasons. Some of those are in what we call claims. where they go back on the owner and they say, well, you know, this detail wasn't perfect on the steel, and because of that, you know, we had to refab it and it cost me $250,000. Some of them are legitimate, some of them are not. But in cases where people don't have a lot of money in the bid or they're upside down to start the bid, they're going to search for every spot in those drawings that are wrong and any problem. And by law, they have a right to ask for additional money and compensation for that work. And that kind of sets up what we ran into. If you look back at the last 2 years, there's been a lot of litigation on this particular program. And I kind of point towards having to do these jobs as lump sum low bid in a tough environment, economic environment, construction environment, is the reason behind a lot of that. I don't think it's because there's a lot of bad people and a lot of mismanagement. I think a lot of it had to do with economics, maybe some of the folks that we were dealing with. The industry, especially the feds, kind of started, and I was mentioning earlier, the NAVFAC, the Naval Facilities, were one of the folks who really started and pushed design build very hard. And it's a delivery model we use here, which once again, in theory, you're going to have less change orders because you only have a contract with one entity that is both a design and builder. And oftentimes it's a partnership or contract or subcontract arrangement. And also what helps there is that part of it is, it's objective, but there's some subjectivity to it. But you get to choose, if you will, or grade these contractors. You don't just have to award it to the lowest bidder. So you pick the best contractor for that particular project, with price being a factor, mind you, but it's not the determining reason that they're going to get the job. What this does is allow you to put some...
Doesn't that put you in opposition to the 1920 law you cited?
No, it does not, because there's legislation in place that allows us to do... What is the...
Best value.
No, what is the legislation number for... The design build?
Design build, it's 82,600. Ed code.
Ed code 86,200 or whatever. I'm close. That allows us to do design build work. And so design build as a delivery model is fabulous, and it's been used in the private sector for a number of years. I was using the example of I used to build automotive plants for General Motors, Mercedes. And so what we would do oftentimes is we would start digging the foundation right away. As soon as they got a twinkle in their eye, they want to build an auto factory, we could dig that foundation. Meanwhile, the architects and engineers are designing that drawing as we go along. So we have a continuum, and there's a lot of parallel activities, and you never take that big 10-month or year chunk to design the building. It's all part of the construction phase, so it moves very rapidly. Now, we lose that advantage here in what we do because we have to go through DSA. So we pretty much have to have a pretty cooked set of drawings to go in, reach approval, then allow the contractor to start building in most cases. So we lose the expediency, but we still gain the way we're able to select the contractors based upon qualifications in many cases and best value. There's another vehicle that has been used in the public sector in the education world for a number of years. And K-12 guys have been going crazy with it. I myself went crazy with it. But community colleges, there's been an argument as to whether we can use it or not. Now, there's been plenty of community colleges in the state that have used it effectively, and it has been challenged several times by one particular attorney in San Diego, and he's been defeated every time, as far as I know, in the particular case, but he tries to make it miserable for you to actually go this way. That route is called lease-leaseback. Now, lease-leaseback sounds kind of funny, but it was originally built, or it was originally passed through to allow agencies who didn't have a lot of money to be able to bring in a financier and a developer and to get the work done and then pay later. So basically, you would lease the land, your spot of land that you own, to a developer for a dollar, for amount of time, let's say it's 24 months, and they would in the, after 24 months, you would pay for the improvements on that land. Hopefully those improvements included a structure, a school, whatever it may be that you contracted for. Now we have the money. We don't need to finance it. But the good news about this lease-leaseback model is once again, the selection process is based upon qualifications and best value. So you don't have to pick the lowest bidder. So once again, you get to pick the best builder or the person you think can do the best work for you and where you get the best value. It's something we are going to attempt. We're prepared with a validation action. So what that means is we will try it, go out, get our contractor through this method. We'll then take it to court, and Todd, correct me if I'm wrong in process, but we take it to court. They have 60 days, somebody has 60 days to object.
Yes.
I'm looking at you.
Yes, called the validation.
Okay. There was an affirmative nod. So I'm on track. It's 60 days. If nobody then has a problem with it, we can go forward and build. And it's been an excellent way to do with the work, meaning the owner, us, we get to follow the design, we hire the designer, we go all the way through the design, stop, then we go through the lease-leaseback process or the selection process. And once again, it's based upon qualifications, it's based upon approach, it's based upon the history and the performance of that contractor. Have they done a good job in the past? Hey, what a novel concept. And we look at those things and then make our decision, or it's obviously based on a point system. And so it's something else that we're going to try, and I just want to make you aware of it, because in speaking with Elliot, he was a bit surprised by some of the limitations we had as a public agency with regards to the people that we choose to hire to build some of our projects. Because as you know, we've had quite a few quality issues, and we spent a lot of money on attorneys in court. Any questions on that one? Because I know it's a little weird and a little confusing.
I'm glad the money issue here in the middle of this, because the time to fix you to do things out of these different models is different. You can't begin right away, you have to get the architect's approval. Have you included that in your analysis of best value to you, okay, for these various models?
Yes, absolutely. Because in some cases we already have a stamped out design that's ready to go out to bid or would be going out to bid. But in this case we can use a leaseback selection as opposed to lump sum low bid. Yes, sir.
First, let me say, when you mentioned that you had a way around the attorney, you had me scared.
I
thought it was to kill all the attorneys.
I got a room full of them here.
I sort of missed out on that step where the courts, how you avoid litigation. You said there was a 60-day period for somebody to object. Is that to object and file a lawsuit, or?
Yeah. What Mr. O'Reilly is referring to is what's called a validation action. And I believe, and Kevin can correct us if we're wrong, the initial competition documents. We have a pilot project, which is going to be the ATF, the Athletic Training Facility Project at Valley College. Present the contract and competition documents to the court, and it's a publicly noticed action that solicits a response, basically. If it goes through that process and the default judgment's entered at the conclusion because no response is received by the courts, that becomes an insulative measure that the district is taking to protect that competition process.
It's what if there is an objection?
If there's an objection, then a response, an answer to the complaint or a response to that complaint is necessary, and then in that case it gets litigated, I would understand.
Is there a time limit for the courts to act on that?
I think a default judgment is entered after filing of 60 days. That's my recommendation.
No, assuming somebody files an objection.
Then I think it follows the litigation calendar of the court.
Because that could be time consuming.
It would be. But the advantage is you get those issues out of the way at the beginning. And if the court determines that it's not a proper project, they can stop it before it starts. Or if it's a project that's not available in a leaseback scenario.
But so far you say all the court decisions have ruled that it's okay.
Yes, my knowledge.
Now how do you avoid the issue, the problem of still the brother-in-law getting the contract?
That has to do, that would be with a lot of the build-up of the selection panel. We'll be pulling from people who we know already. We go through a, what is the process we go through?
There's a conflict disclosure and check.
Yeah, conflict disclosure and some other processes that are going through prior. So you'll have a panel typically made up of about five people. They'll be all construction professionals, for the most part. And you're making a selection because you're not necessarily going back to, let's say, faculty to hire a general contractor, because it's not about, you know, it's not about what the building's going to look like. We're now at the point where we need folks who can analyze, you know, a level two, level three schedule, looking at 1,500 activities on a schedule and developing critical path and looking at the way that you're going to phase a job, the way you're going to build a job, the way it's going to be put together, and we'll be looking at very objective things like the EMR rankings of their safety programs, how they're going to handle the safety, how you're going to handle getting people around the campuses, the makeup of the team. Has the team worked together before? Is it just people from different corners of the United States that they've thrown together? There's a lot of different things that go into scoring these particular things.
Where is this all at? In a state law somewhere?
Yes, sir. Okay. I think that it would be a law, right?
The procedures for the competition are created by the entity, and those procedures for those competitions are presented to the court, and that becomes the rule for the RFP. The conflict disclosure process, the Form 700 disclosure that the district utilizes for disclosure of interests, are all district policies.
Where's the legislation that backs this up?
It's also in the 80,000 series of the Education Code.
You showed us some figures in our side special path, and you were comparing the design bid bill with the design bill, and there's some other factors you were throwing to show us a more perfect version. Can you also, based on showing lease back in that same consideration?
Absolutely.
And with all the factors you see in litigation going, that would be really significant.
It's something I've done in another job of mine, where we did billions and billions of lease back, and in most cases, you would pay a little more at the front end. There's no question. We oftentimes pay a little more than if we put it out on the street for rip and read. But what we got in return was we finished on time. I didn't have to throw 10 additional people at it to try and manage this general contractor. I didn't have to worry about litigation. I didn't have to worry about somebody BKing out, you know, halfway through the job. I mean, it was a much, and at the front end of these leasebacks, oftentimes you build in shared contingencies so that you have, there's a reason these folks want to do good work for you. And even there's certain things you can build in that you share it at the end. I was saying my first 1746 is what they were called in K-12. The general contractor on our first one gave me a $3 million check at the end of the job at the ribbon cutting, so it was pretty cool. It was returned contingency they didn't need that we built into the contract. So it's a good system. Dick, you've had experience with it. You've seen us do it over at LUSD. What's your impression?
No, the actual construction gets done. It's usually on time and, you know, contracted for the amount, and they take on that responsibility. That's not my issue with the whole system. My issues are still the same. There is room for kickbacks, favoritism, and all of the things that the sealed bid process was initiated for that we will see coming back. And it is going to happen because it's human nature to, especially when you're talking about millions of dollars, to find the person that can help you get through the process and provide him with some favors if you're the contractor or the joint venture that's putting this package together. I'm sure it's happened already, and we don't know about it on a large scale. But I have to believe that it's happened, and it's going to be exposed at some point, some big cases where some politician was favoring the process for a friend of his that was helping him on his campaign or something like that.
So let's continue to do
that. That's my concern.
Is there not my agenda or question comparison?
We haven't done the DC spec yet, Elliot, so we're not going to be able to provide you anything on that, unfortunately.
Okay.
But at some point, we'd be able to.
Yeah, if we can get it through and it gets going, hopefully it'll, I'd like to make it regular.
Would that have to wait for the first such transaction to expire, like 2 years from now?
Yeah, probably. It's going to be a way to go.
I'd like to then thank you very much, and I'd like to move on to our next topic, because we did have an ad hoc committee meeting and did use some conclusions. Our conclusions are to you, members of this committee, recommendations, and then we have proposed resolutions which you have to vote on.
I'm sorry to halt you. I just wanted to make, I have one more bullet up here. Okay. Yeah, I'll make it quick, I promise. As you know, we went through a program management procurement in January, and we recently signed a contract with the program manager named AECOM. They're a large company, 50,000 or so people, probably about 160, 150 countries. And our headquarters here in Los Angeles, they're a local company. The program director is a lady named Terry Mestis, but she could not be here today. But I wanted to introduce Stu Markey. Stu Markey is going to be the deputy program manager. Stu's a retired Navy captain on the warfare side. He wasn't a CB. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Stu.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much. Terry certainly sends her regrets. She's taking care of elderly parents back east that unfortunately ended up in the hospital at the same time. So she had to get back and attend to that back in Northern Virginia. I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about our company. I'm very proud of it. We're located right here in Los Angeles. We're the only Fortune 500 company I'm aware of, headquartered here in town. We're right on South Flower Street, a block and a half from district headquarters. As Jim mentioned, we're a large company, 45,000 people. We like to talk about that. But there's really 100 or so enthusiastic professionals that are looking at this particular project. And we're very anxious to get started and pleased to have been awarded the contract. And I have to thank Jim and the team for doing a very thorough job and holding us accountable to come forward with the things that we need to do to win that. There's some information here. ENR is the professional journal that tracks companies like ours, and we've got a pretty good report card in terms of design, global design, and so forth. Really, our sweet spot are large public projects like this, very complicated, a lot of constituencies interested, and we think that we do this very well. Right now, we're working on the number one World Trade Center back in New York City. It's one of our projects. We're the project manager for the Pentagon when we had that incident a number of years ago back in 2001 or two. And this is falls into that category. And we think we're very, very equipped, well equipped to handle it. I invite your attention to the our org chart. And I'll just spend a couple of minutes going over that. We certainly report directly to Jim. He's been a great mentor for us, and he's got a good vision for the future. Terry Mestis comes from a background in large program management. She's an architect by profession. Right now, coming off a $5 billion federal program, where she's worked in an environment where she's providing support to organizations in the federal government that were providing direct support to the folks that are working in Afghanistan and overseas. I report directly to her. My background is as a naval officer, and certainly and been in a large program business for quite some time, most recently with San Diego Unified School District, where I was the director of their $2.3 billion program. We've got a department to the right called Program Assessment, run by Jim Cole and Deloitte. This organization was set up as an internal audit function to really go out independently and look at issues within the sphere of influence that Jim has out and really take a look independently on what we're doing right and what we're not doing so well. And act as another set of eyes. Our conviction is that it's better to learn first ourselves than to read about it in the newspaper. So we put a lot of effort into that. The officer in charge, our senior officer for this whole program, is Mike Burke. He's our company president. And he is intimately involved with this, and you know, we get a lot of help from him on looking over our shoulders and how we're approaching this thing. So we've got a great communications manager, Brent, who comes with my right-hand man to get me up to speed on the relationships that we have throughout the district and I'm very appreciative of him here. We've also hired a program relations officer, Enrique Glaska, and his job is really to help forge the relationships throughout the enterprise, with starting with ourselves, the college presidents, the faculty, the staff, the board of trustees, and all the other important folks out there that make these things work or not work. And we're going to spend a lot of time on building that constituency and working hard to make sure that our vision values and the mission, vision, and values are aligned with the expectation of the organization. We also have a Kathleen Kopis, who is going to manage our ISO 9001 quality assurance program. AECOM is one of the few large corporations that has been certified by the International Standards Office for Quality Assurance. And this goes through our whole entire enterprise, not only the field construction processes, but our administrative processes, how we communicate, how we manage our databases, and so forth. It really is a game changer up front. And that involvement in quality assurance permeates our whole organization. Interestingly, we don't have an option in this area. It's our corporate standard. Our corporate quality assurance manager has been with us for the last 3 weeks here helping us shape that, and we've got a deliverable to Jim that he's going to grade before we get started in the QA area. Then we go down into the two basic departments, construction management, and over into our operations, and before that you'll see the typical line environment that you'd have in any organization that undertakes this work. Our transition will be located a block and a half from the district headquarters down on South Flower Street on the ninth floor. I'm happy to report that we've got about 80% of our staff there located already, a big move next Monday, and we're ready to go. I'm happy to report that Todd and his folks have been very, very accommodating to this process and very helpful in how we've gotten work done. It's been relatively seamless. We've had the normal hiccups of data transmit, changing data and trying to get up to speed on what everybody does and where. I'd like to report that about 30% of our staff have had previous experience in the program from years gone by. 30% have transitioned off the current staff, and we've got about 30% of new faces. So we're not starting out with really in a deficit. We think we've got a great team. We know we've been hired to move the program along and make some changes. We're equipped to do that. But I think we've got a pretty good foundational understanding of what's happening out in the field. And the last slide, I'd like to talk about our early partnership perspective. We've engaged a professional partnering consultant who's had experience with the district before, and we're shaping, we owe a deliverable to Jim on the 5th of May, on how we intend to approach the work with all our constituencies. And certainly the big three, the college presidents, the CPM, our staff, and certainly the district, have to come to an understanding of what roles, tasks, and responsibilities are for each one of this organization as we get into a new environment. We think that's an extraordinarily important step. Terry's intimately involved with that, how we're going to shape that. And it'll be the foundation for our moving forward. That certainly won't be a one-time event. We intend to continue with that process and forge those relationships at all nine campuses and throughout the constituencies, throughout the entire program. Alignment of these expectations up front is absolutely essential to how we get the work done. It's probably the most important thing that we're going to take on here in the next several months. The quality program, I talked about that. Key performance indicators, I was very energized by the discussion that everybody had with the KPIs and some of the graphics that Todd's folks put together. That is a foundational part of our whole approach. We've got 16 categories that we've identified already. And not only are we going to grade or take a look at and assess the performance of the folks in the field, the CPMs, but our own. We have people looking at how we do business ourselves, how effective we are in communications, what the construction program looks like, our own internal administrative processes, a wide variety of things that's just not limited to basically how quickly we're building the buildings. We think we've got an extraordinary responsibility for customer satisfaction, how the faculty and staff are using the buildings, whether they're pleased with what the end state is. We're also looking at the end game. in my background, I always felt that these institutions really had an M&O problem, not a bond problem. How do we sustain these buildings after they're built? Are they, you know, once we're turned over, do we just walk away from this? We've got bond money. We don't have general funds money. So how do we build buildings that are sustainable, that they can be used by the universities, that they're reasonably maintained? So we have to look at the whole body of responsibility.
Life cycle criteria.
Total life cycle cost. Absolutely, yes, sir. We're a large firm, so we have a large menu of services, what we call our toolkit. Because we're broad and deep, we can reach out for topic experts and people that can help us solve the sticky problems that we may not have in-house. This toolkit becomes very handy, and we can get response very quickly. The partnership with Deloitte is, to me, an extraordinary game changer. You know, the Deloitte team, led by Jim Colwell, reports directly to the program director, the dotted line to us. So if Jim has an inkling that he needs to have somebody look at something, apart from our staff, he'll direct those folks to take a look at it. And this comes into the whole idea of the top five. It's very supportive of that concept. Where should we spend our time? Where should we spend our attention? So I know my comments have been short and concise, but we absolutely look forward to this challenge. We're very enthusiastic about it. We're anxious to get started. Yes, sir.
Are CPMs new under this program, or are they the same people?
No, sir. Third system.
Oh, okay.
All right. So they've got contracts. And
that history goes on.
Absolutely. And you know, in periods of time, you know, this assessment process has a grading standard that we've developed, and we'll be sharing. In fact, it's a deliverable that we have, and it's defined in our program procedures manual, which the first draft was turned in yesterday, or correction this morning at 7 o'clock. I delivered. And this is a large document that really sets the stage and the path for how we do our work. That'll be automated. Many of the reports that you've got today will be real-time online coming out of our ProLiant system. We intend to build these databases that go out and seek this data, aggregate it, and put it in a format that's easy to understand and it's done in real time. We want to get the net cycle of delivering information, quality information, quicker to the customer.
Question, where is Deloitte on this chart? Is that Jim? Is that you on this chart?
If you look on the upper right hand box of the floor chart, it says Director of Program Assessment.
That's what I said, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that's your quasi independent quality?
Yes, sir. Right.
Thank you. Just one other comment. Using your numbers, I get that your cost for your sales firm employee is $160,000. Is that about right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Is your project office in the same place as your headquarters?
It's right across the street. You know, we're in the ARCO Towers.
Right.
The headquarters is in the north building, and we're in the south building. So there's an arm's reach. You know, it's a comfortable distance for us.
Obviously, a person with historical reference to L.A. still calls them the ARCO
Towers.
Asked to why.
Yes, sir. We're on the ninth floor.
Just a quick point of information.
Sure.
As a new player, before, I guess we had a transition, a lot of new players here, I'd mentioned in our minutes that it seems to me that we have a human relations bonanza bringing you on now. The truth is, given these austere economic times, you're aware there's a project labor agreement.
Oh, absolutely. Right. And we're fully supportive of that.
At our particular college, and I'd imagine at others, there are, of the nine colleges, three are in the San Fernando Valley. My family's been there since the 1800s,
yes,
so I feel a commitment to that area, as I do to the other six colleges. But when we looked at ours, and it requires that 30% of the hires should be local,
right,
and 6 to 10% at risk, we had zero. And so
the local hires?
Yes. So we've been busy about the last 2 years bringing together the president, the representatives of the unions, community, various community service agencies, so we can put some teeth to this, develop a prototype that could be replicated at the other eight colleges, which isn't to say that isn't already happening, but we want it to be somewhat strategic.
in that. So I look forward to working with you. I know we've already set up something at Mission College, because I think we've got the unions, the labor union, which is the first place. There are a lot of unions.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
Can I just get a vote to your members of the committee? Are you willing to extend this, in overtime, extend this meeting at 10 minutes?
How are you going to inform? How are you going to inform? You missed one?
That's the next thing I was going to do when you finished speaking.
Okay.
I think we did. I'm going to check that.
Just that's part of the tour.
No. Okay.
All right. Yeah, and I could be quick with this, but I just wanted to put this in your memory.
Very high on our priority list. We've got a relations individual that's charged with this responsibility.
Is that Enrique?
Enrique will be working in that area, but right. This other person is Michael Bejarano.
Okay.
And he'll be working with us in this area.
That's cool. The point I'm trying to make is that we've been able to work out some situation with the Labor Union 300, because we found in our experience that it's difficult to get community people in an electrical union and others. It takes a long time. So they've created special boot camps for the community.
Right.
Take 5 days. They're finishing in 5 days. We already had 37 people go through it. 15 are now working. They're not necessarily working, though, on community colleges. So I just want to emphasize that, because I think it's a real opportunity for us to build good relations with our respective communities by employing our community. What better story than the community building their community college?
Absolutely, it's a core value.
Welcome. We're excited to have you.
Okay, first of all,
show of
hands, how many people on the committee are present? We have four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. We do have a quorum. So we need to get on to our next bit of business, because it leads to a vote and you can't vote. Okay, unless it's a quorum. We have it, we're going to use it. You're going to hear about it. I think it's very important, and I'll let David, who led this action, proceed. And anybody try to leave, they're going to be barred.
I got to leave soon, though.
Okay.
Well, this won't take long. Over the last few meetings, we've had issues that have come up and a couple of resolutions passed by the Board of Trustees, and also the discussion of the cost scheduling and quality differences between design-build, design-bid-build contract amendments, which you heard some of the conversation about. The ad hoc committee being advisory to the poll, DCOC, had a long discussion 2 hours before this meeting started, and the resolutions, the first resolution that we discussed was the satellite district contingency funds.
If I could just add a note, to be based on standards, it's the role of these committees on parts, this one in particular, that if the Board of Trustees is considering a motion, we would like to learn about it in advance, and then we advise them to they don't have to take it. That's our role. But it turns out they meet every other week or something like that, and we meet every other month. So sometimes our advice is that. Go ahead.
You received copies of these resolutions before, so I'll read the resolve section so that you're reminded of what it was. And that was the Ad Hoc Committee on Assets Management resolved. The Ad Hoc Committee on Assets Management, being the district, the Board of Trustees Ad Hoc Committee, determined that it is best at this point to suspend further development of planned satellite projects, including Tahunga, Sunland-Tahunga, which is Los Angeles Mission College area, Burbank, Los Angeles Valley College area, LAX, West College area, and Health Careers Academy at County General Hospital, East Los Angeles College. And be it further resolved that the funding for those projects be transferred into the district bond fund contingency. And it further be resolved that the Ad Hoc Committee on Assets Management determined that the development of the Firestone factory building project proceed with a reduced scope. And it further be resolved that the Ad Hoc Committee on Assets Management determined that any remaining funds at the completion of the Firestone satellite project be transferred to the district bond contingency fund. A long discussion the participants that were here, Ann, Elliot, myself, Ava, and this is the recommendation that we would be sending to the Board of Trustees. Recommended that the approval of the Board of Trustees action, recommended approval of the Board of Trustees action in Resolution BT4 on January 30th, 2013, to suspend further development of the planned satellite project. Suspend further development of the planned satellite projects, and the funding for those projects be transferred into the district bond contingency fund. That we recommend approval of the trustees' ad hoc committee on assets management determination that the development of the Firestone factory building project proceed with a reduced scope, and that any remaining funds at the completion of the Firestone satellite project be transferred to the district bond contingency fund. That was the recommendation that we would make to the Board of Trustees.
No, that's not before you was a motion.
I did want to make one thing clear with respect to your quorum. You do have eight. Your quorum is eight.
We've got nine.
Oh, we have nine.
You added Nabil.
Right.
But under the board rule, members of the district employees cannot be members of the district.
But we do have a
But you quorum. Have eight. Your quorum is eight.
Thank you
but
very much.
Nabil is not a member of the DCOC.
Did you put your hand up? It's got
nine. No. No,
he
didn't vote.
Yeah. Right. So that is So that is the effective representative of the colleges. Yeah. Very much.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm encouraging you to start counting heads if you want to take a vote.
So that's the motion that's been seconded. Is there any discussion? Anybody wants any more information? Call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? All those abstain? So it passes unanimously. Second.
The second resolution was a little quicker, not much discussion. It's the resolution BT4 of September the 12th, 2012, and it titled Standardized Central Accountability Controls Utilizing Industry Best Practices for Build LACCD. Resolves are that the college presidents are charged with the managing of the educational and facilities master planning for each college and ensuring that all construction projects meet their college's educational and programmatic needs within the standards set by the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges. And it further be resolved that the Board of Trustees, the Los Angeles Community College District, hereby direct staff to ensure that the request for proposals for the LACCD program manager reflects the best practices and centralized accountability measures recommended by the above reports and audits. The program manager will report and be managed by the executive director of facilities, planning, and development, and the program manager will directly oversee the college project managers. The committee reviewed it, and the recommendation is to support the LA Community College District Board of Trustees Resolution BT4, September 12, 2012, standardized centralized accountability controls utilizing industry best practices for build LACCD.
So this is the motion before you.
Second.
Discussion, comments, questions? Call the question, all those in favor? And all those opposed? All those who abstain? One abstention. The last comment?
And the last is, was the review of the differences in cost schedule and quality between design build and design bid build contracting methods. And the board, after a long discussion on this with input from Mr. O'Reilly, recommended in regard to the DCOC request for comparison of building and contracting methods that the LACCD facilities provide a presentation on the beneficial or negative aspects of alternative building methods being utilized by LACCD and the industry, including cost, schedule, quality of building, legality of using alternative bidding, and the cost of changes.
This was is to the next meeting, running in June. So do we have to vote on this one?
The short, the result was is that there was a request of facilities.
Any questions, though, for any discussion? Okay, then, yes, I call the official meeting. What's our?
Just the surplus property.
That was mentioned in the first.
It was referred to as satellite.
Yes.
We don't have the time to discuss this, but I'm curious on March 12th, I was called to come and speak. The accreditation took place here. I had come to district offices. As a newbie, again, I was under the assumption that all of us were being called, and it turns out that I was one of a few.
This is a request for your activity on the part of the chancellor.
Oh, okay.
By the chancellor, is that correct?
That's my understanding. Yes, that's my understanding.
The chancellor informed me of that, that was separate from this committee. He recognized your expertise.
Okay.
And he wanted to have input from you on the subject. Of course, that's fine.
Okay.
No, I wasn't told of it. I don't know
why. All I'm concerned about is, because I was in there 45 minutes. The person I followed was there 10 minutes. And I'm just curious how it turned out.
I have no idea.
Okay. Because this was related to bond money. They wanted to know, just as a theme, whether or not the kind of discussion that was taking place this morning takes place. And what is the corresponding communication between the locals that we represent and this body?
You're referring to the ad hoc committee?
Yes.
Well, now you've all witnessed what takes place. We voted on something that will appear in our minutes. Okay, and the next time you meet the board, we will specifically inform them.
But here's the context I'm talking
about. I got to leave.
Okay, no problem, because I don't vote on
motion to adjourn. Or?
I just wanted to finish this. The Chang, apparently John Chang, the state controller, audited us.
Yes.
And said that the perception was this was a rubber stamp, and right. That's what they're speaking. So I'm just curious what transpired, that's all. We don't need to.
Well, let me just say, can we have another 5 minutes to do? Just by way of history, I personally view, and I've said this publicly, and I've said it to the Board of Trustees, okay, the experience with the state controller and his commentary upon this group lacked several things. In the first place, he never contacted this group. Okay, so where did he form his opinion? If he formed it from the Board of Trustees, they should have involved us. They never did. I have been critical of the board because we should have been involved with the Board of the evaluation. And the second thing, and I say this with all due respect to the Board of Trustees, they're hardworking people, they put an awful lot of time. They made some comments following the critique that was provided by the state auditor. And I think they were inappropriate. They never discussed them with us. They talked about certain things they had done which impacted us, and I don't recall any of that ever having happened. So there's a bad communication there. This process that you've seen here, in part, serves the purpose to make sure there's good communication.
No question.
More than that, the two of us meet with the board with some frequency. It's supposed to be quarterly, it's probably semi-annually, but we have a chance to direct them to, and they are receptive to that now.
I have a question, just to follow up on your thought. So Bobby went, how many people went to this? You went?
That's what I did see.
There were two of you. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Well, I thought when you said you did, I thought it was rather interesting in the purpose for which they went, since you were the short timer.
Yeah.
And other people were here longer, were here when Chang wrote his thing and so he's relatively new, but they used you to interview.
My impression, the reason they requested you had nothing to do with your comment about the actions of the board, but rather because of your expertise in labor relations. That's the way it was presented to me. Nonetheless, I think, if it was to talk about what the board had done, some of you more experienced may have been a great choice. I think the chancellor has the right to confer with
you. No, it's not a matter of right. It's not a matter of right.
I thought it was curious. And they asked us to do
this. This is crazy.
This was the.
Yeah.
Oh.
This was accreditation.
Accreditation, which is not the other.
Accreditation of what?
I'm at a loss here. No, I thought you were talking about the state controller's interview.
No, that was part of the discussion.
Was this, was this WASP?
Pardon me?
Was this WASP?
Yes. But my understanding is that, because it was simultaneous to the accreditation that was happening on campus, it was, which is a separate situation, that's dealing with campus. This was related to bonds and the DCOC and how that relates to the COCs and all of that. What I found interesting is I talked to Camille afterwards, because they asked, I brought all the stuff you guys had given me and all the stuff my local had given me and shared it with them, because I have nothing to hide. I'm a newbie. But the reality was, he asked me for materials, and it just didn't. There were two gentlemen representing Chang that was there.
You have the information.
I very much doubt that there was anybody at an accreditation visit representing the state controller. If you were at another meeting, it's very confusing to me, and I've been in the system for 25 years. But if this was part of the accreditation, then your role would have been as part of the community of participants in the activities of Mission College. On that day, there were three teams visiting Mission, Valley, and Pierce.
I understand it was separate from that.
And in addition, they visit the district office as it pertains to the accreditation of each of the colleges. In other words, the district office is not accredited. If you talked with anybody who represented John Chang, that was not part of accreditation at all.
Is that the case that you actually spoke to people who represented John Chang?
Yeah, absolutely.
And see, that's why I
your comment is valid.
That's why my question.
Somehow I totally misunderstood. Well, there may have been two things that the
Bobby, there's a follow-up SEO article going on right now. So they're in, and you know, they've already put forth some findings, and in some cases it sounds like we're just going to disagree or agree to disagree. I mean, they're still set on our use of bond funds, and that's really what they're grinding on. It's interesting, I didn't know they were asking about the role of the BCOC.
That was the only reason I was invited, was to, Camille, through the Chancellor's representative, asked me to come to discuss the operation of the DCOC, and basically it was nothing more than how did I think it was running, and I gave them a history of
was this
what
Chang
we did, or what? John Chang's.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with what?
No.
But the public, I don't know.
But it's also interesting, a lot of things, as you know, on input comes from the survey. And why are you, so you would think they would ask someone who was here when they were making up from members like you who were, when they were criticizing everything and the changes that took place, as opposed to Spotty came in after the new part, you know, the new changes. So that was the reason I asked.
No, I think your observation is a good one.
And it's nothing, it's just an observation, that's all.
And at the risk of being repetitive again, when I was asked by the Chancellor, or informed is a better way of doing it, because I don't have to give permission, because I have no permission to give, that you were being used, my understanding was in context with your later background. There was no discussion about Chang as committee.
But to be transparent, I just want to finish this, and I'll feel reconciled. They asked me for particular materials. It didn't strike me right. I called Camille, and she was upset, because apparently she had worked out some agreement that any materials that they were asking for should come through her. So I don't know, I'm just, as a newbie, I just found it very interesting.
You know, you did the right
thing. And wondering how we did it.
I mean, that was the agreement.
And did we survive?
We would supply them with what they asked for, but we wanted to keep track of it. It's just like any PRA or public records request or anything else. You need one conduit to flow through where all the information is.
Absolutely.
Taken track and what
they're
getting.
I agree.
You did the right thing.
But you know, the congressional investigative style is quite different. They're very suspicious of the conduit, you know, maybe tainted, et cetera, so they probably have some other things going on. In any event,
that's fine. They'll take whatever people get.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let us know things.
Appreciate
quickly, I want to introduce somebody. This is Chris Dunn. This is the CPM director here for City. Chris has been here for 4 years. He works for Harrison Associates. They're doing a great job out here, spending the public's money responsibly and trying not to let the community overpower him. But Chris is willing to give you a walk around and show you some of the cool things they've done out here. This is just one of the cool things they've done out here. But please, Chris, you want to help me
play? Let me officially then close this meeting to a close. I'm now transitioning to the other phase where at least in the college, and the presence of you, you are representative.
Well, a couple highlights of the building.
Guys,